I'm Reverend Lisa Day, minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Welcome to our weekly radio program, where you'll hear a segment from one of our recent services recorded at our church on beautiful Troop Square. We invite you to join us Sundays at 11 a.m. in person or via live stream on Zoom. You can find the Zoom link and more about Unitarian Universalism in Savannah at our website, uusavannah.org. We hope you enjoy today's program.
Good morning, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
I'm Mary Garofalo, and I'll be serving as worship associate today. Our minister, Reverend Lisa Day, is our worship leader this morning. Our worship, religious education, and covenant group theme for January is practicing resistance. Here at the UU Church of Savannah, we are working to build a diverse, multicultural, and beloved community. We celebrate the presence and participation of people of all races, genders, sexual orientations, abilities, and ethnic and national origins. We warmly welcome you on YouTube and on site, whoever you know yourself to be and wherever you are on your journey. With the lighting of our chalice, symbol of our Unitarian Universalist faith, we enter into sacred time. We light our chalice as a symbol of the light within us and the life that flows through the world around us.
Now let us begin. Now let us rededicate ourselves to the long and bitter but beautiful struggle for a new world. Come, let us worship together.
I am doing Love at the Center, so I'm your guest speaker for that. It was a hard one for me to write, because it involves my nephews, my nieces and nephew, and my sister-in-law, Molly, Devin, and Leo, and Loretta. And in another way, though we like to leave him unmentioned, because this is about them, it involves my brother, Peter. Loretta divorced my brother, Peter, approximately 15 years ago. The kids were probably coming out of high school or going into college, or maybe they were in graduate school. I really don't remember. But he was very destructive towards them, and they endured a lot. And they also learned how to be took care of themselves very well and supported each other and their mom. And I just watched over the years how this love just kept growing and how they just kept being there when any of them had a problem with their father or their husband, and how they kept themselves together and grew as people and into mature adults who are just these loving, caring people that you'd have never known that had a person in their life as negative and awful as he. I went to their Christmas this past way, and they live in Omaha. And Omaha, I like Omaha a lot. It's a great town, and, you know, it's just sort of this town I like. It's cold, and it has snow. It has a great art community. And it has the World League baseball team championships and everything there and all sorts of things. And I went to their Christmas knowing that Devin, Molly, and Leo were putting it on together themselves with their mom in the side, but it was their Christmas, and it's how they wanted to do it. It was not how they were allowed to do it. So they had this incredible Christmas tree There are about 10 of us all together. And to make it even more special for them, they invited their dogs, which is not surprising because they like to travel with their dogs. Devin flew from San Diego with her Chihuahua sisters, Izzy and Una. Leo drove from Chicago with his German Shepherd troop, and he even brought his cat to all this. And well, Molly lives in town, and thank goodness, because she has two Rottweilers, and one is named Peaches, and the other is Vito. And they just want to sit on you and cuddle, and they weigh over 100 pounds, and it's just too much. But the holiday was great. They made dinner. They made the mulled wine. They put on the music. They entertained everyone. And we exchanged gifts that evening, which was Christmas Eve. And then on Christmas Day, they did what they love to do, is go to the movies. And we went to the movies. And it was my first movie probably in about, 5 years. And I enjoyed it. But it was just to see them together and to see how they just all rounded together, rounded their relatives, and through whatever has happened, and it's going to happen some more in the future, they're ready for it. And they are prepared because they have love for each other and they have support for each other. And they know that they have my support and their uncle's support, Tim, my brother. And when it happens, it happens, and we'll just deal with things as it does. So they, I'd just like to say that they, to me, are love at the center. To see how they have come along, see how their mom has come along and dealt with all these problems and made their lives so happy and beautiful. Thank you.
Let us enter into a spirit of meditation. The words of meditation this morning from John O'Donohue for A New Beginning. In out-of-the-way places of the heart, where your thoughts never think to wander, this beginning has been quietly forming, waiting until you were ready to emerge. For a long time, it has watched your desire, feeling the emptiness growing inside you, noticing how you willed yourself on, still unable to leave what you had outgrown. It watched you play with the seduction of safety and the gray promise that sameness whispered, heard the waves of turmoil rise and relent, wondered, would you always live like this? Then the delight, when your courage kindled and out you stepped onto new ground, your eyes young again with energy and dream, a path of plenitude opening before you. Though your destination is not yet clear, you can trust the promise of this opening. Unfurl yourself into the grace of beginning that is at one with your life's desire. Awaken your spirit to adventure. Hold nothing back. Learn to find ease in risk. Soon you will home in a new rhythm, for your soul senses the world that awaits you. Our first reading this morning from Naomi Shahab Nye, Burning the Old Year. Letters swallow themselves in seconds. Notes, friends tied to the doorknob, transparent scarlet paper sizzle like moth wings, marry the air. So much of any year is flammable. Lists of vegetables, partial poems, orange swirling flames of days, so little is stone. Where there is something and suddenly isn't, an absence shouts, celebrates, leaves a space. I begin again with the smallest numbers. Quick dance, shuffle of losses and leaves. Only the things I didn't do crackle after the blazing dies. And from Matt Goodfellow, poem for a new year. Something's moving in. I hear the weather in the wind, sense the tension of a sheep field and a pilgrimage of fins. Something's not the same. I taste the sap and feel the grain. Hear the rolling of the rowan ringing and singing in a change. Something's set to start. There's meadow music in the dark and the clouds that shroud the mountain slowly, softly start to part. Finally, from Martín Espada, imagine the angels of the bread. This is the year that squatters evict landlords, gazing like admirals from the rail of the roof deck or levitating hands in praise of steam in the shower. This is the year that shawled refugees deport judges who stare at the floor and their swollen feet as files are stamped with their destination. This is the year that police revolvers, stove hot, blister the fingers of raging cops and nightsticks splinter in their palms. This is the year that dark-skinned men lynched a century ago return to sip coffee quietly with the apologizing descendants of their executioners. This is the year that those who swim the border's undertow and shiver in boxcars are greeted with trumpets and drums at the first railroad crossing on the other side. This is the year that the hands pulling tomatoes from the vine uproot the deed to the earth that sprouts the vine. The hands canning tomatoes are named in the will that owns the bedlam of the cannery. This is the year that the eyes stinging from the poison that purifies toilets awaken at last to the sight of a rooster-loud hillside, pilgrimage of immigrant birth. This is the year that cockroaches become extinct, that no doctor finds a roach embedded in the ear of an infant. This is the year that the food stamps of adolescent mothers are auctioned like gold doubloons, and no coin is given to buy machetes for the next bouquet of severed heads in coffee plantation country. If the abolition of slave manacles began as a vision of hands without manacles, then this is the year. If the shutdown of the extermination camps began as imagination of a land without barbed wire or the crematorium, then this is the year. If every rebellion begins with the idea that conquerors on horseback are not many-headed gods, that they too drown if plunged in the river, then this is the year. So may every humiliated mouth, teeth like desecrated headstones, fill with the angels of bread. Here end the readings. A few days back, I saw a post from the Kitchen website boldly announcing that 2026 is going to be the year of the cabbage. Penzi's Spices has declared it the year of the American immigrant. One of my friends and her husband's chose Paradox as their year of the word for the Christian church year that began on the first Sunday of Advent last month. Others of my friends and colleagues have been setting intentions for the year ahead, carefully distinguishing intention making from resolution making. Still others, and some of the same ones, have been compiling year-end lists of books read or favorite music or miles logged in 2025. Every year I look at all this turning of the year activity, and I think I should do some summing up or set an intention or choose a word of the year for myself. I almost never do. But I am hereby declaring 2026 the year of resolution. I started down the path to this declaration by being under the deadline to get sermon titles to Nancy for the January newsletter. Resolution seemed like a good title for the first Sunday in January, which is still smack dab in the heart of resolution season. These brief days when folks have made or are making and have mostly not yet broken New Year's resolutions. And I thought I could explore not only the phenomenon of resolution making, but also the quality of resolution with regard to this month's Soul Matters theme of practicing resistance. After all, practicing resistance requires us to be resolute. Along the way, however, it turned out that what's really on my heart is optical resolution. If there is a prevailing common theme among all the summing up 2025 posts I've seen and all the looking toward 2026 posts I've seen, it is this: our country is in great peril, greater peril than perhaps at almost any other time in our history. Safety nets and the rule of law have been all but destroyed. Citizens and residents and migrants are in grave danger, with certain subsets more vulnerable than others. And our collective survival depends upon our action in the year ahead of us. Really, none of that is earth-shattering. We lived through 2025. We know how bad it was. And we know, as it has ever been, the future is in our hands. I think there can be little disagreement about that. Where folks of goodwill and like mind might differ, if only because of the enormity of the task, is on the best course of action to pursue, where and how to begin and move forward. Mutual aid, get out the vote efforts, protests and rallies, coalition building, general strikes are among the scores of possible viable starting points and strategies. Being a student of neither political science nor the history of social movements, I can't presume to know which course of action is best. Realistically, there probably isn't one single best approach, and our country is in such danger on so many different fronts that any individual community or organization could serve the whole well simply by choosing whichever direction makes sense in their setting and given their means and resources, and then proceeding with both steadfastness and flexibility. And I believe those efforts will be more effective to the extent that the individual, community, or organization bring high resolution to bear on whatever path they pursue. That is to say, we, any one of us individually, all of us collectively in our neighborhoods and our communities, need to hone our ability to pull the minute details of a whole into clear focus and to distinguish between superficially similar but substantially different situations. As Imagine, the Angels of Bread, the magnificent poem by Martin Espada suggests, we need to see the world as we want it to be in order to abolish those systems and practices that currently make it inhospitable, oppressive, life-imperiling to so many. We need clarity of vision to see what is, prophetic imagination to see what could be. We need to see with the finest of clarity, not simply what we want to stop, but what we want to build. Not simply what we want to rectify, but what we want to create anew. Not simply what we want to abolish, but what we want to usher in. At times such as this, a world without missile strikes may seem as unimaginable as enslaved people without manacles once seemed. At times such as this, a country of abundance that cares generously and extravagantly and unflinchingly for the safety and well-being of all who dwell within its borders may seem as unimaginable as whales floating and diving and spouting in an inland lake seem. But if we can imagine that country, and if we can see the lies and the greed, the bullying and the mirrors that make the country seem impossible for what they are, illusions ready to disperse as the words of the people grow louder, as the actions of the people grow bolder, then that country is within our grasp. I drew our opening words this morning from Beyond Vietnam, A Time to Break Silence, an address delivered by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. at Riverside Church in New York City on April 4th, 1967. Now let us begin. Now let us rededicate ourselves to the long and bitter but beautiful struggle for a new world. And he continued, this is the calling of the children of God, and our siblings wait eagerly our response. Shall we say the odds are too great? Shall we tell them the struggle is too hard? Will our message be that the forces of American life militate against their arrival as full humanity, and we send our deepest regrets? Or will there be another message? Of longing, of hope, of solidarity with their yearnings, of commitment to their cause, whatever the cost. The choice is ours, and though we might prefer it otherwise, we choose in this crucial moment, we must choose in this crucial moment of human history. And if we will only make the right choice, we will be able to transform this pending cosmic LG into a creative psalm of peace. If we will make the right choice, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our world into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. If we will but make the right choice, we will be able to speed up the day all over America and all over the world when justice will roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. The words of Dr. King. We failed in 1967 to make the right choice. We often have. But I hear truth today in the poet Matt Goodfellow's words, something's set to start, There's meadow music in the dark and the clouds that shroud the mountains slowly, softly start to part. I believe that is true for our community, our congregation, and our country if only we make it so. Today and in the year now ahead, may we, with both great resolve and lucidity, rise to Dr. King's challenge, rededicating ourselves to the long and bitter but beautiful struggle for a new world. Amen.
This is Reverend Lisa Day. I hope you've enjoyed this program from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Please join us at one of our services sometime soon at our church on Troop Square or live on Zoom. We're the beacon of liberal religion in Savannah, and you can find out more at uusavannah.org. We meet on Sundays at 11 a.m. Thanks for listening.